This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network, and the following program is brought to you by the Vodoliak Law Group, fighting insurance companies since 1963, and TickSplits.com. TickSplits.com, no service fees. The price you see is the price you pay.
This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network. The following program is recorded live and intended for all audiences.
Radio is scripted, though. We just come up with it. We don't use computers. We don't rehearse. We're going to talk about this next. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Bulls. And then we're going to have Brad Bixon. And then we're going to have all this. No. No. If you don't know what you're going to talk about in the top of your head before a show, you shouldn't be in the business. I don't know what you got. I feel like Vince Vaughn in a couple's retreat. The sharks are circling. Old school, baby.
You're listening to the Mike North Advantage, and it begins right now.
That's right. The Mike North Advantage starts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman, and we have a very special show for you tonight as Mike has lined up a great guest that he'll introduce in just a few seconds. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl, of course, but first, an interview with Mike's guest. Mike North, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Aldo. We're doing real good. I got an hour of fun and frolic tonight. I got a very special guest, and of course, at the end of the interview, you'll jump on for a couple questions, and then we'll talk for another 20 minutes after that. But this guy's been one of my dear friends. You know, a lot of the guys that I covered or that I watched ended up becoming buddies of mine, and this guy is no different. I haven't talked to him for a while, but every time the Hall of Fame comes up in the National Football League, I think about him because his name hasn't been called yet. And believe me when I tell you this, folks, it should be called. It should have been called already. You're talking about a guy that had a nine-year career, was a Pro Bowler five times, ended up being on the NFL's All-Decade Team of the 80s, led the league in rushing four straight years. I mean, I know it, like, I didn't even have to look this up. He also was there for the Pitt years, Pitt Panthers, when the Pitt Panthers actually had some bite. He was Dan Marino's roommate. We're pleased to have on my dear friend, my buddy, my pal, a guy that, boy, he was tough to get around. He really was. In fact, hardly anybody did. Jimbo Colbert. What's up, Jim?
Hey, Mike, what's going on, man? Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you, buddy. You in Florida right now? You taking in the sun? I mean, you know, it's a little bit different here in Chicago. I know you don't miss the Chicago winters, so you're laid back out in Florida right now, huh?
Yeah, I'm living out of Florida now. It's a great decision for me because I love Chicago, and I'm back there quite often, but you know, that cold weather seeps into your bones, and it's been difficult as you get a little bit older, especially with all the stuff I got wrong with me. But I love it down here. And well, I love Chicago. I get back there as much as I can. I'm there in the summer a lot and got to play a little golf when I'm up there. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I got to ask you, you said you have a lot of injuries. There's no doubt, well-documented about all the injuries in the NFL. And I've often said, whether it's concussions or anything else, it's no different than any other trade. A guy can fall off a building that's a construction worker, break his back, possibly die, an airplane pilot. Do you sometimes get tired of hearing about the current players or even players from 10 years ago crying about injuries like they're coal miners and they work 15, 20 hours a day, and I understand there's got to be safety, but I'm sure they did everything they could back in the day, not that there wasn't stuff they could have done better, but do you get tired of it like a lot of the fans do over these guys who make a lot of money and have the choice to play?
I don't really get tired of it, but I understand where they're coming from, but I think the difference is, you know, the guys that played after, you know, 93 are a lot better taken care of financially, made a lot more money, you know, have health care for 5 years after they're done playing, had a 401k, you know, have a severance plan. We didn't have all that stuff as well. So, you know, I mean, sure, it's tough. Football's tough, but you're exactly right. My dad, you know, worked in a steel mill. My grandfather worked there for 44 years, same mill. My brother, my uncles, every mill member of my family worked in a steel mill. So, you know, that was a way to make a living, right? Coal miner, steel mill, I get that. So, you know, you can't complain when you play a kid's game for a living and make a lot of money.
Let's talk about the way you played the kids' game. You played it as good as anybody I've ever seen. I've been observing the National Football League. I went to the Bear Championship in 63 when I was 11 years old. I've seen almost every left tackle in the business. And I've seen the good ones, the bad ones. I've seen the right tackles, the left tackles. You, for your run of 9 years, I don't think there was a better offensive tackle on the left side. And this is when guys like Munoz were playing and everybody else. And yet, the knock hasn't come on for the Hall of Fame. And I read today where you're the only member of the all-decade team of the 1980s. At least this is what it said. That's not in the Hall of Fame. So everybody else that was on that all-decade team is in the Hall of Fame. And sometimes I say Jimbo was too humble. Jimbo was too quiet. And maybe Jimbo thought eventually the Hall of Fame would come knocking because you were never the cheerleading type. Am I on the right track with that?
Well, you might be right about that, Mike. You know, I never really tooted my own horn. You know, when I got there in 1983, you know, Mike Ditka told me the job was yours. I started my first practice as a Bear in minicamp, and just started and played and never really complained about anything. I think Mike Ditka said when I first got there, you know, after I had a game where, you know, missed a couple assignments and he was upset at me, it was my third game as a pro, he said, there's no excuses. He's better than half the tackles in the league right now. Line it up. And that was my rookie year. So I just think I was just expected to come in and play, and I played at a level that was expected from me. And so when you're expected to play at a certain level and then you play at a certain level, then I think people come to expect that rather than say, man, this guy's good and he's really kicking ass this year. He's doing this, he's doing this, he's doing this. But it was just expected of me. You know, it was expected that I would grade out better than everybody else every week. It was expected I would make the Pro Bowl. And when I didn't, you know, that was the disappointment. So, you know, you're right. Guys that do, you know, toot their own horn and did all that kind of stuff, I never really did that. But, you know, I came in, I played the game, I think, you know, left tackle as well as anybody's played in the past couple decades. You know, I'm not going to apologize at all for the way I played or how I did it. And, you know, I think that my teammates appreciated that.
You know, you had one of the great offensive lines in the history of the game. They talk about the Bear defense, but I contend, I don't care. You have Van Horn, you have Colbert, you have Bortz, a converted defensive player. You have a Becker, and you have Jay Hilgenberg. I mean, if somebody wants to show me a better line, that's fine. You lead the league in rushing 4 straight years. Walter Payton ran over your left side a million times. But I think the most impressive thing, and I know you didn't play the Giants all that much, but I heard Bill Belichick say, well, Lawrence Taylor is the greatest player I ever coached, which is BS. It's the player that maybe got him his jobs. And I know he was a talented player. He's a top 10 player, in my opinion. But to say that over Brady just seems ridiculous. But when you played Taylor and he lined up on your side, I think it was 3-4 times in your career, he never got a sack off you. And that seems to be something that's known throughout. So, you know, when you stop Lawrence Taylor, that's like a center stopping Dick Butkus in his prime. You never heard of that. What made the matchup advantageous to you? Because if it wasn't advantageous to you, he would have gotten a sack or two because he did play against our quarterbacks. And Jimmy McMahon was mobile, but not mobile by today's standards. What did you have on Taylor, or what was it? Was Taylor, maybe were you in Taylor's head?
I don't think I was in his head. I just think I matched up really well with him because I was a physical tackle. You know, I wasn't going to give a lot of ground and pass protection. You know, I was going to let him take the outside rush and push him past the quarterback. If he tried to come inside, I was going to take him down the line. You know, I was going to try to stuff him at the line of scrimmage as many times as I could. You know, but those games, Mike, I think were a little difficult because you remember I had Leonard Marshall on my five technique.
Oh my God,
right over my outside shoulder. And you know, the game before that, we played him in the playoff game. The game before that, you know, he almost killed Joe Montana out in San Francisco. And I think he had 3 sacks in that game. And I played him in the game at Soldier Field in 85 and shut him out. And I shout out Lawrence Taylor in the same deal, and I played him several other times and shout him. I just think I matched up well with guys like that. You know, Fred Dean, same thing. Charles Haley, same thing. I do think I matched up with guys like that that didn't allow a sack or guys like that because I just kind of – I think just the way I was more of a squatty guy, you know, I was – you know, it seems strange to say that, but, you know, 6'4 guy squatty, but I wasn't 6'6, wasn't 6'7. They weren't going to get an arm under me. They weren't going to get me off balance and then come and club me back inside and get to the quarterback. So I just think it was a good matchup for me physically.
You roomed with Dan Marino, and I spent some time with you and Marino one night at the National Italian Hall of Fame, and I just was sitting there. I go, my God, I can't believe this. First of all, I said, there's Jimbo, but then there's Dan Marino. You guys were roommates, and he said the other day in today's game he'd throw 65 to 70 touchdowns. And I can't argue with him. I can't argue with him on that. I mean, he threw 50 when the rules were archaic, for God's sake. Do you agree?
Right, absolutely. I mean, he threw 50 when they mugged you. You know, they undressed you halfway down the field. I mean,
right.
I mean, you know, you try to come across the middle and you get an elbow to the chops, right? Nowadays, they put you in jail and suspend you for half the season. You know, you can't touch anybody now, so... You know, to be a receiver in the National Football League is a pretty good gig, right? You don't get mugged off the line of scrimmage, right? If you're going up for the ball and they even kind of grab your arm or something, it's interference. So the game has changed completely. But, yeah, I mean, Danny, the way he played and how he recognized defenses. And, you know, remember, he had a lot of help down there, too. He had Duper and Clayton. They weren't too bad. So so he had a guys he could throw to as well. So. You know, but that what a talent he is, and you know what he was able to do.
You know what I noticed about the 85 Bears, though, and I listened to them all. Everybody blames somebody for the lack of more than one. Everybody blames somebody. I don't care. Richard Dent can blame Ditka. This guy can blame the guy on that guy. That guy's blaming this guy. The McMahon injury. We didn't get this guy and that guy. Is it time for the Bears collectively as a group to say, you know, we had a good enough team. We screwed up. We should have won at least another one. And I always contended was Buddy Ryan leaving. I like what the Bears have done now. They're bringing in a guy that was like Fangio and Pagano. We brought in a completely vanilla defensive coordinator. Sure, we gave up less points and went 14-2, but then Washington comes in and hangs 27 on us because the fear factor was gone. When you're a quarterback and you're afraid to take a snap, it's different than when you're a quarterback and you know you're going to play a zone defense. That's my take. Buddy Ryan stays another year. I think we win another Super Bowl regardless of who's quarterback. What's your take?
You know, there's a lot of validity in that, Mike. I think you're right about some of that. And that's a pretty good take on it. But I think there's a couple other factors here.
Okay.
You know, you say about Jim McMahon, we couldn't keep our quarterback healthy, and I get that. You know, I mean, you're right. We were 14-2, you know, the year later. We were a 52-yard field goal away from being 15-1 2 years in a row. Nobody's ever done that. So, and our offense was pretty good, but, you know, we struggled that next year because Jim McMahon wasn't healthy. I think one of the big keys that people don't really, and this is not a knock at Steve Fuller, and this is not a knock at Mike Tomczak. I think one of the things that the Bears were just not willing to invest in is a great backup quarterback. Okay. You knew you had Jim McMahon that, you know, had some health issues, and, you know, I love Jimmy Mack, but, you know, he was a little fragile. He wasn't real big. He was six foot tall and 180 pounds, and he played it like an offensive lineman. So, you know, he was going to get nicked. But, you know, bring a guy, if you brought a guy in like a Steve DeBerg or someone like that, right, that can win with, you can win with, right, and can take you there to a playoff game, that's what we need to do. But the Bears just weren't willing to invest in someone like that. And that's not a knock against Tomczak and Fuller by any stretch of the imagination.
No, you know why?
Very hard.
Here's what they would say. Well, they're 18-3 with Tomczak. They're 9. No, they tried to make the quarterback as the guy that got him there, and I always knew, no. The team is so damn talented that anybody right now is quarterback. And I think the one that angers me the most, and I blame Ditka, I blame everybody. If you bring in Doug Flutie because he went on to be successful, and you start calling him a midget, you start undermining him from the beginning. I'm not saying you, but, I mean, there were two factions here. the one that wanted Tomczak and the one that wanted Flutie. And to this day, and I've talked to other Bears, from Hampton to McMahon, and I've told them, maybe if everybody would have banded around Flutie, he might have played like he did in Buffalo. I don't know. But he was the best guy I thought that you guys brought in, and a lot of the Bears wanted Tomczak. I don't know if you wanted Tomczak, but if history's going to bear out, Doug Flutie is the better quarterback between the two. What happened with that dynamic, in your opinion? The Bears handled it, I think, completely wrong, from Ditka, bringing them to dinner, maybe alienating some of the players, to some of the players being a little bit selfish and looking out for their own guy.
Yeah, maybe some of that went on. But, you know, I just think in that stage of Doug's career, he just wasn't very good. So at the end of the day, I would have rather had Mike Tomczak quarterbacking, because he played the whole year with us. He knew the offense. You brought a guy off the street that didn't really understand the offense. In fact, a couple times during that Washington game, he called the wrong formation and the wrong protections. And then you saw some –
yeah, he went with the Buffalo plate, right? Or he went
maybe from Boston College or something. Boston, I don't know where it was coming from. But at the end of the day, he called a couple wrong protections, and then, you know, he got sacked, and, you know, there's just blame going all around. So, you know, I agree Doug Flutie was a talent, but at that stage of his career, he wasn't very good.
But you would have been willing to say to Tomczak, we just brought Steve DeBerg in. And even though Tomczak was your guy, what you're saying is, and I agree with you, DeBerg was good all the way into his 40s.
That's what I'm saying. He was good. Exactly. Yeah. He was good. He was good his whole career. So that's a completely different deal. But when you bring a guy off the street, right, that really hasn't proven himself in the NFL, I mean, Steve DeBerg won a lot of games in the NFL. So, sure, I'd be willing to say that. I think it would be better for the team. But, you know, Doug at that – and plus, in our offense, he wasn't going to be successful, because our offense was a drop-back offense. You know, Jimmy Mack had a chance to back up from the quarterback or from the center, read the defense. You know, you would have to put a lot of rolls and moving pocket and, you know, get him out of the pocket a little bit, Doug. And we didn't have a lot of that. We had it, but we didn't – that wasn't our bread and butter offensively.
Okay. Let's talk about the – Hall of Fame for a second, because I saw something that I was mind-boggled about. Tony Boselli, who's played basically healthy 6 or 7 years in the NFL, period, played less time than you, was eligible just since 2009. He didn't get in. But I said to myself, if he gets in and Colvert's not in, and I didn't get you on to talk about this. It just happens to be the day after the Super Bowl and the Hall of Fame stuff. And I'm saying to myself, I'm going to ask him. I mean, first of all, I like Tony Boselli. I've interviewed him 3-4 times, but he didn't have your career. I looked you both up. I looked up your statistics. I looked up everything as far as rushing titles and everything else and what your offenses did. He's got just a minuscule amount of achievement compared to you. Yet he's up for the Hall of Fame, and he didn't miss by much. He's been involved in broadcasting. He's a networking guy. It's my opinion he might get in, which will piss me off. And what will it do to you, who Mike Ditka said, and this didn't get by me, which had to boost your confidence your rookie year, you're better than half the guys already. So how would you take that?
Well, I think if Tony got in, I think it would be a plus for my career. I think it would show people that, you know, you got a guy in with a short career, similar career. I think I played 30 more games than him or something like that, 25 more games, whatever it is. So similar career, similar honors. You know, I think he made a few more Pro Bowls than I did. I think I made, you know, all NFL, you know, consensus, you know, twice, and like 3 times all NFL. So I think it's similar. He just made more Pro Bowls than me, and I played longer than him. I got a couple offensive linemen of years. I think I got 2 offensive linemen of the years. He got 2 offensive linemen of years. So I think when it evens out, it's a very similar career. So I think if he gets in, I think that would bode well for me down the road. I'm hoping, because someone like Tony gets in. Plus, he's on the All-Decade team of the 90s, but I think he's second team. I was first team All-Decade in the 80s. So I think that's good.
You're the only guy not on from the 80s team. Everybody else is on. The left tackle of the team's not on. In other words, if you tell somebody, we have this guy, we have Montana, on the left tackle isn't on. in the Hall of Fame yet. Well, that's the most, in my opinion, especially back in the days where if you were allowed to just destroy the quarterback, was one of the top two or three most important positions on the field. Is it the Bears writers? Because I saw that Brian Urlacher, I'm not taking anything away from Dan Pompey or anybody else that gets the Bears in, but I never have thought Brian Urlacher was a first ballot guy. In fact, Ray Lewis and Patrick Willis, I think, were better middle linebackers while he was playing. I wanted Sebastian Janikowski. He's still kicking 6 years after Brian. Taking nothing away from Brian Urlacher. But if you see that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and you see that good guys like Dan Pompey and other writers have prepped for him, did they give the same effort towards you in your opinion?
No, I think Dan Pompey's doing a heck of a job for me. I think he's doing the best job he can with what he's got to work with, right? And I think that, you know, my short career has been a hindrance. I think early on, you know, I just don't think there was much discussion about it. I just don't think it was important enough to people. And I just think that as you get older, then what happens is people are like, well, this guy's not in. Then all of a sudden, when every member of the 1980s first team all-decade teams in the Hall of Fame, and you say, what the hell happened? How did he slip through the cracks? And then you look at the 70s all-decade team, there's only two guys not in, Drew Pearson and Cliff Harris. So how did those guys fall through the cracks? And then I think and then Jerry Kramer was out for how many, 50 years, 48
that
years?
That was a spin.
I mean,
that was a spin.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And he just got in. So you think, how does a guy slip through the cracks like that? You don't know. So, I mean, I think Dan Pompey is doing a heck of a job. We talk, you know, he asked me questions, you know, he's done interviews with me. Dan's great. And you know, we talk a lot about it, and he's trying to do the best job he can. So, I mean, he's a great advocate for my career. And said, if Tony got in, I think that would be a boost to my candidacy.
I'm going to tell everybody a story about Jimbo. We're in Vegas. Me and Jimbo are in Vegas. And Jimbo's, we're having a few drinks, and Jimbo's walking around. I'm walking around with Jimbo. I'm the big shot, you know. I got a guy 6'4", about 260 behind me. You know, we're walking around. People are recognizing him, everything else. I go, Jimbo, you know, you should play this three-card poker. I said, let me tell you something. I've been winning nothing but money. You got to get three of a kind. They deal you three cards. You can get a straight flush, 9-10 jack. True story. Jimbo goes, okay. He goes, Mike, we're buddies. I'll trust you. I remember this like it was yesterday. And we roughly sat down, and we lost like 17 hands in a row. Okay? anyway, so now I don't even have the pressure of me losing money. I don't have the pressure of looking at the dealer. I can't even say nothing to the dealer. I feel breath over my left shoulder from the guy sitting next to me. I look over, and Jimbo's looking at me like, you son of a gun, you made me sit down here. And the very next hand, Jimbo got three of a kind, and he got paid 40-1. And I thank the Lord upon
three of a kind flush. Three of a kind. Three of a kind. Yeah.
Three, yeah. I was. Do you want to talk about timing? Because you're about ready to blow your stack.
And then, I said, let's go to the blackjack table and stop screwing around over this crappy game, you know.
And I said, please, just stick it out a few more hands. And we had lost 17 hands, and then you won. It was like God came down and just said, I did you a proper, pal. Jimbo's happy with you now. You know, I got to tell you, we have here at Bears Barroom, we've had some issues with Bear management, and I don't want to get you in any trouble, but it's the same Bear management that you had to deal with. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, did guy, I think, made mistakes. I think he made big mistakes with the strike year. I know he was contracted by the team, but he didn't have to open his mouth and say, you know, these guys are Chicago Bears too. I thought that hurt. But I thought that what the players did wasn't good either. I think it was a two-way street. But I thought ownership after 85, breaking up the team, I never forgave Michael McCaskey for it. I never will. We haven't talked since April of 92 when I beat him up on the radio, period, and I don't have any interest in him. But now we're getting heat because we have something that says Bears Barroom. And in light of the way the Bears are going now and the NFL, how it's changed, do you think that the NFL with the rules and everything else, it's almost petty sometimes in your eyes compared to the way it used to be, even though I know you worked for an ownership group that really subtracted great players instead of adding them after 1985?
Well, there's a lot in that statement.
well, I think it's true, and you're going to figure out how to answer it.
I think it's changed a lot, and I'll give you one example of that. I made the Pro Bowl in 85 and 86, offensive lineman of the year in both of those years. And in 83, 84, 85 was my three-year contract. So going into the 86 season, Jerry Vannesi and I couldn't – we hammered out the salary and we hammered out the incentives, but we couldn't hammer out any of the deferred comp, okay? And I played the whole entire 1986 season on a handshake. Not even a contract.
Wow.
Could you imagine that happening today?
Wait a minute. So in other words, were you going off last year's contract off that, or were you going off the terms? Well, you trusted Vannesi. There's no doubt he's one of the greats. So, but you trusted Jerry, your agent, or whoever was representing
you. Marvin Demoff was my agent. We agreed on a base salary for 1986. We agreed on the incentives, but we couldn't agree on the deferred comp. And that's why we couldn't come to a contract to sign. So we said, okay, here it is, you know, verbally, here's your salary, here's your incentives. And I shook Jerry Vannesi's hand, and I played the whole year on a handshake, 1986. And then they fired him. And then I had to come back and try to negotiate a contract. How about that?
I was a free agent.
Yeah, well, it took a while to get it done, and Marvin did a great job, but took a while to get it done. So the NFL has definitely changed, and I think the money has gotten so much bigger, and it's just, you know, this huge kind of force right now. And, you know, when you tell me about your stuff, I think it's just unfortunate. I mean, people, you know, what you're only doing is promoting the NFL, and you're promoting the Bears. So I don't see any issue with having anything like that. I think you guys are doing a great job there, and should be able to continue that without any interference.
Let's talk about a couple personal things. When I first met you, I mean, Penny, how long have you been married to Penny now, your lovely wife?
35 years.
That took too long to answer, first of all.
I mean, 35 years, all right. 100.
And you have three kids, right?
Three kids, yeah.
And you have, are they all girls? I'm trying to remember.
All back in Chicago. And Casey, Jessica, and Scott are all back in Chicago. They were kind of spread out for a while. Casey was in California, and he's back in Chicago now. Jessica in Chicago, living downtown. Scott was coaching for a while, and he was a GA at Pitt, and wanted to do that, and then just decided, you know, this, you know, I'd rather just get into the business world. So he's back in Chicago. So I got them all in Chicago, which is great for me.
All right. And you, you know, you do stuff. You've been in the healthcare business. You've been involved in healthcare. You worked for Baxter, but now you have a different name. Tell everybody what you're doing.
Well, you know, I started my career in Baxter, and then Caremark, which became CVS, and a bunch of different healthcare companies. And then I ran a business in Pittsburgh for 10 years called Institute for Transfusion Medicine, which is a big blood-related company. So anything you could think of do with blood, we did. We tested it. We distributed it to hospitals. And the company we owned in Chicago was called LifeSource. So we owned that company. And then back in February, we merged that company with a much larger company based in Phoenix, Arizona. So now I'm just doing, you know, mostly healthcare private equity in the private equity space. So working with guys downtown in Chicago and guys in New York, and it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I love the healthcare service space. And I've been very fortunate, Mike, honestly. I mean, I got to play in Chicago, and playing in Chicago is like one of the greatest cities in the world for an NFL player to play in, because you get a chance to meet so many people, right? And you get to just, you know, if you want to work after football, which we had to, these guys don't have to now, but we had to. So what better place to work in Chicago? I mean, I look at Chicago, grew up in Pittsburgh. I look at Chicago as just a big Pittsburgh with all the ethnicities and the neighborhoods. And I tell you, when I got to Chicago, the people opened their arms to me. I mean, it's the greatest city in the world, and I was just lucky to play there.
If Ditka was 50, could he coach today? Or is he just too gruff now? Because everything I saw yesterday in the first quarter, and I know you watched the Super Bowl, a guy catching a pass, he got hit high, and his helmet accidentally hit the other guy's helmet, and they called a 15-yard penalty. I said right there, Ditka would have ran on the field. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just changed so much, and there's just some guys that can't handle the change. I mean, I'm a fan, and I get aggravated sometimes, you know. So could he – is there room for somebody like that? You see Tom Coughlin upstairs now. You see the guys that, you know, were the crossbar grabbers that are basically like dinosaurs now. Is there room for coaching like that?
I don't think I think in today's NFL, you wouldn't be successful. I think the players have changed so much. The money has changed the game. You know, it's all about players' longevity. You know, how long you can play, the length of your career and the health of your career is how much money you can make. You know, I played with the same five guys for 7 years. You know, we all got nicked. We all got hurt. We all played when we probably shouldn't have played. You know, I could sit here and tell you story after story of times that I played when I shouldn't have played. You know, in 1988, when I hurt my back in training camp, I should have taken the whole year off, yet I came back and played 6 weeks later. Stupidest thing I ever did in my career. It shortened my career. I probably could have played three or four more years, maybe played.
They push you to play.
Of course they. Of course. Of course. That was the culture, though, Mike. That was the culture. And I wanted to be part of that. And I was part of that because I was the guy, you know, taking in shots and doing the things I needed to do to play. But, you know, guys aren't going to do that nowadays. And, you know, and I think it's a good thing. Honest to God, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing because they shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. And I think that guys, you know, it was, you know, stupid to do that stuff. So the game has changed. And I'm not degrading the players or saying I'm not saying they're softer. I'm not saying. I'm saying they're smarter. Right now, would I change anything differently?
I think the players' union, are they smarter if the players' unions cut out 2-a-days? Are they smarter if there's no penalty during the week? Well, then injuries are at an all time high, and it does end up shortening careers because I think when you're a boxer, you got to spar all week long. Sure. I don't think you can just walk through a ring and pretend you're hitting somebody, and then on game day, you end up playing and getting hit. A lot of these guys are getting non-contact injuries now, blowing out knees before anybody even hits them because they don't practice hard during the week. Do you think that should be, do you think that's something that's hurt the players a little bit?
I think it might have hurt a little bit. Here's the way we were. We just went live all the time, so there was no.
Yeah, I know.
There was
you guys
no.
Were nuts.
Yeah, there was no difference. But you know what?
You guys play a football game every day. You guys play football every day.
Wow.
Sure, but you started out, you would start out 7-0, you know, 8-1, right? And then you'd lose one. Then you'd lose, and then in December, you faded because you were just completely worn out, right? I think there's a happy medium where you got to come somewhere in the middle where you got to get enough contact work in to get live game time, kind of game speed, so you can feel the game a little bit. And then I think there's time to lay off of that. We didn't do that. We just put the pedal to the metal the whole time. That's where there were fights and guys punching each other and, you know, and practice. And because it's
I'm
just
glad you reminded
and, you
me.
Know.
Hold on. Yeah. I'm glad you reminded me of that. The biggest story, one of the most famous stories is McMichael against Colbert.
Sure.
Everybody knows about it. You're not saying it to anybody that doesn't know this, but I guess that, you know, but back in the day, the Bears culture was always defense against offense. And the reason I like this Bear team so much it's playing now is because they're led and they're all one, it seems like. And you and McMichael, would you like to just recant a little bit? McMichael's already told me it's true. He's already told me it's true. He knows it. I've talked to Steve numerous times. So tell everybody just a quick story about you and Steve McMichael at one day at camp.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, it was just one of those things that happened because it was Green Bay week. You know, it was a little hot. And, you know, guys are edgy. And plus, I don't know, it was like a Thursday or something. So you're starting to back off, but you still kind of went live. So it was just defensive team, I think. And I was just, you know, on there blocking Richard and just, you know, sliding with him. And then I get banged into from slammed in from behind by McMichael, you know. So I, like, turn around, and I go, you know, what's your problem? And he goes, your buddy pushed you into me. What the hell are you going to do about it anyway, right? Which was the wrong thing to say because it was hot. Like I was cranky. Yeah, I was hot. I was cranky. And then I just grabbed him and, you know, kind of hip tossed him and body slammed him, you know, and I got him down and I gave him
I heard you were on top of him and it was going to be ugly.
I got him with three or four good shots right to the head, you know, with his helmet on. It was hard. It was tough. I got him, you know. So then finally they let it go for a little bit and then they broke it up and he stood up and he couldn't talk because he had his chin strap was over his, you know, mouth.
He goes,
and he pulled his helmet off and he goes, you want this helmet so bad you can have it. Well, you know, he's a lefty, you know?
Yeah.
And I just hit him with a red cross and just dropped him. And that was it.
That's what I heard. The final was just kapow. And now,
yeah, kapow.
Did you guys get over it? Yeah.
Over it. We apologize.
Or did Hampton come and say, hey, get him away from my homeboy?
No, there wasn't any of that going on. But you know
and
what?
Van Horn and Hampton are the two biggest human beings I ever saw in my life. Van Horn, did you guys hang out together, any of you guys? It just seemed like you went home and some of these other guys went running.
We hung out every Thursday night. I mean, I was one, when I was at Pitt, my line coach, Joe Moore, God rest his soul, would take us out on Thursday night. And when I got to the Bears, these guys never really had any camaraderie, you know, the offensive line is just kind of, you know, to themselves. So I said, hey, we got to start going out Thursday night. And we started going out Thursday night. Now it's like a phenomenon throughout the whole league. I think I started the whole thing because
no one else
was doing that unless they were doing it before. They weren't doing it at the Bears before I got there. I know that. And so, we start picking a place and then it just became a tradition. You know, it was just the offensive line, you know, 83, 84. And all of a sudden, you know, Matt came, which we loved. So that wasn't a problem. But then the tight ends came pretty soon, more running backs pretty soon, you know, then it became not that. So we had to start kind of,
if I'm
know,
out partying,
I don't need
Emery Moorhead or Pinky Gentry looking over my shoulder, okay? It's for the offensive lineman. Hey, before we let you go, we got Eldo Gandhi. Eldo, I know you already talked to Jimbo. There's some chat board questions, I'm sure, and maybe you have a couple questions, Eldo?
I do, and I just want to thank Jim Covert for being on the show. We've had a lot of Bears players and former Bears players on Bears Barroom, but we've never had one from the 85 Super Bowl team. So thank you very much, not only for being on the show, but also, you know, so many of our followers here at Bears Barroom are just so diehard Chicago Bears fans. And time after time, they are always saying thank you for having these players on. It gives us an opportunity to tell them how much we appreciate what they have done for us, the fans, because we know the sacrifice you guys put in to play this sport that is so dangerous, that is so physically demanding. And you're doing it, of course, to make some money, but you're also doing it for our entertainment. And so first and foremost, we want to thank you for your service to the NFL, to the Chicago Bears, and just for being a great guy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Great. So here are a few questions. Everybody wants to know if you still keep in touch with Dan Marino. And I did a quick Google search, and there's a 1983 Chicago Sun-Times article with Herb Gould where you shared the story about during Marino's rookie season, he would not call. He stopped calling you after he won the starter's job. I'd like to know if you could recall that story for us.
Yeah, I mean, we used to talk every week, you know, and, you know, he'd just say, you know, this Woodley guy, I'm better than him, I can sling it, he can't break a glass, you know, blah, 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 and say stuff like that. And then that went on for a couple weeks more, finally goes, I'm starting this week. Then I didn't hear from him for a month. So it's a nice guy, right? We're best friends. We live about a mile from each other. We're at the same golf club. We play golf probably once a week, and we see each other a lot. So he's my best friend and has been for a long time. So it's I get a chance to see him a lot now.
Excellent. Chat room followers, Harp4803 and Airger want to know, what's your relationship like with guys like Jim McMahon? Do you stay in touch with them? And they're also concerned about Jim's health. There's been some reported, you know, health concerns and so forth. What can you tell us about Jim and some of the other former players you might stay in touch with?
Oh, I saw Jimmy Mack 2 weeks in a row. I saw him at, he invited me out to Phoenix for the National Quarterback Hall of Fame that he got inducted into out in Scottsdale, which was fantastic. I got a chance to spend the weekend with him. And then I had him out the next week for a Gridiron Greats event in Fort Lauderdale. And he came down and played golf with us. And he's doing fine. Excellent. Playing golf without shoes still, and just enjoyed being with him. And I think cognitively he's doing well. He's hanging in there.
There's nothing wrong with McMahon.
No, he's doing fine. He's doing fine.
He's doing great. I mean, you know, the medical marijuana, you know, I can't remember yesterday. He's as sharp as the board. He's as clean as the Board of Health. Good. Because I think a lot of that stuff, that concussion stuff, maybe a lot of players got caught up in it, Jimbo. Did they try to get any of that from you? Did they try to get you to sign that class action suit?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know what, Mike? I'm in that class action suit because I did it because I just felt like, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow and what's going to mean. Maybe tomorrow I wake up and I start having symptoms. I haven't had any, and I don't, you know. So I just did it as just because I thought it was the right thing to do. But, you know, I'm not actively out there pursuing it, you know. So.
Yeah. Isn't the big issue there that the NFL was aware of data that, you know, constant head collisions could cause some issues and they withheld that information from the players? Isn't that the big thing behind all this?
I think that's right, Aldo, and I think it's what's happening is just there's a tremendous amount of data. It's almost like the tobacco companies, right?
Right.
Smoking's not good. Everyone can smoke, no problem. You know, I mean, it's you know, there's nothing wrong with it. But of course, they knew it was, right? So I think it's the same thing with the concussions, and I think that's the main kind of argument from the player side.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jimbo, you're outstanding. Appreciate you coming on. We got to see each other real soon, maybe during the summer. You know what? I'll be pushing for you to get in the Hall of Fame. Dan Pompey does a great job. The Bear fans know what you meant to those teams. They do. Period. End of story. I've never heard anybody bum rap you ever. You're a class act. Penny's doing great. Your family's doing great. You're richer than you were when you were a player. There's no doubt. I mean, you know. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the Bears. You're right. The money has changed. The money has changed so much and meant so much. You had to look for a work. You had to worry about your future after football. But we appreciate you jumping on Bears Barroom, buddy.
Mike, had a great time. Aldo, thank you very much. Always great to talk to you, Mike. And hope to see you soon.
You got it, man. Say hi to everybody, okay?
You bet.
Thanks,
you
Jimbo.
Bet. Thanks.
Bye-bye, Jim.
Jimbo Covert, Aldo, one of the
unbelievable
greatest left tackles in business. Who was going to kill me one night in Las Vegas because I asked him to sit down and play three-card poker. I said, believe me, you'll get three of a kind. We counted the hands. He goes, this is the 18th hand I've lost in a row. And he was looking at me, and I was like we're sitting at the Paris Hotel. And I'm sitting there going, please, dear Lord. Please, dear Lord. On high, I am begging you. And all of a sudden, I think he got a 9, 10, and jack. A three-card flush, and he got paid like 40-1. That's exactly what happened. But he was great, and you know what? Those are stories that, I mean, the McMichael story is famous.
Oh, my goodness.
McMichael came back at him, and he decked him. I mean, just decked him. That's how things used to be.
Yep.
Now they bump into each other in the locker room. There's a lawsuit. You know what I mean?
That's right. Seems to me like every time I've seen a fight between an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman, my money is going to be on the offensive lineman. They always seem to do a really good job of holding up for themselves.
Well, Jimbo's a quiet guy, where McMichael goes, what are you going to do about it? Like it's something out of the Dukes of Hazzard. You know what I mean? And then the next thing you know, McMichael's is on his back. So, but that's competition. That's how those guys were.
Yeah.
They were the best team. So it's that Bear defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Bear offense was so good, people forget. and ball control because they practice against the best defense in football. And I disagree with him about the quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think Buddy Ryan leaving was the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing in a different type of guy. I think what the Bears have done this year, mm-hmm. Pagano says, I'm not changing anything Fangio did. Well, if you're a player on the defense, you don't have to worry about a whole new playbook. You could just relax this year and be ready to play with the same defense you had last year. Pagano's going to learn it. Why make 11 guys learn your defense? Maybe you should learn their defense after you saw what they did and Tobin decided to change everything.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. Now, statistically, that Tobin defense was better, but to the eye, it was a totally different defense.
Oh, to the eye, it was like the defense was like today's defenses.
Yeah.
Except for yesterday.
Let's talk about
it. They decided to play defense yesterday. I go 1-1. I had a great season, great year at Barroom.
You sure did.
But I'm disappointed in the Rams. And I'm going to tell you something. This nonsense that Todd Gurley is hurt after he runs 10 times,
mm-hmm.
catches a pass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, runs up the middle at full speed, breaks one for like 15 yards. Then they're going to tell me he's hurt today?
Yep.
He's mentally hurt, maybe. Maybe he's depressed about something. Maybe he tightens up in big situations. I brought it up. Barbara Streisand, she had stage fright. She yeah. overcame it. Todd Gurley might have to do the same thing. The big moment, to me, is what he didn't want. I don't see where he's injured. I didn't see it yesterday. I didn't see limping or anything.
Yep, it's a mystery. Brian Baldinger on his Twitter account showed some video of Gurley on one play, and he said, this guy looks 100% healthy. Why did he only run the ball 10 times? That's a huge mystery. It's a huge mystery.
It's called, and you know what? And I'm not going to ever disparage anybody that has mental health issues,
mm-hmm.
but there are people out there,
mm-hmm.
just like there's hoaxers out there that will say they were beat up and they weren't. There are people out there. Believe me when I tell you this,
mm-hmm.
that will use situations when they choke or when they can't face the big, that will go to depression. I'm mm-hmm. depressed or
mm-hmm.
I needed to see Kevin Love.
Yep.
Kevin Love from the Cleveland Cavaliers. It may be legit, maybe not. But the one thing they have now, it wouldn't surprise me if 2 or 3 weeks from now, Aldo, Todd Gurley, they say, well, you know what, he's seeing somebody, a therapist. You know, because a lot of teams are doing that now,
mm-hmm.
which in my day and age would have been considered back in the day a form of weakness. Now maybe it will help the guy. But there's something not right. Yeah. That was like keeping Earl Campbell and Walter Payton out of the game.
Yeah. We didn't see that much back in the day. I don't think there was anybody in the 85 Bears who would have dared sit out a game. And we just heard Jimbo Covert say that he was pressured to come back with a bad back, and he gladly accepted the challenge, but it cost him seasons in his NFL career and may have cost him a rightful place in the Hall of Fame. It's sad. But I hear you about Todd Gurley. Now, let me ask you this about this football game yesterday, this Super Bowl game. Are you of the opinion that that was a great defensive battle or that these offenses just did not have it together?
I talked to my brother Danny today. He lives in South Carolina. And I go, what'd you think of the game? And he goes, I loved it. I go, me too. It was like a chess match.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more exciting than a one-possession game.
Mm-hmm.
With two very good teams. And when you have two high-powered offenses that can't penetrate a defense in today's day and age, this cemented Bill Belichick as the greatest coach in history over Vince Lombardi, who I loved. Because there's free agency now. There's different players every year. And the way that he called that defense, both sides, I think Sean McVay's an overrated coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all I can say. Bill Walsh, in a coma, would have called a better game. He even admitted he got out-coached.
Yes,
that's got to be – that's youth.
Yeah.
That's youth. They're saying he's a genius. He wasn't a genius. That's like Alexander Graham – that's like Edison inventing the light and electrocuting himself 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
Okay, geniuses don't do things like that. So to me, I think McVay – and Goff are going to have pressure on him to perform next year. You got Gurley. There's a lot of question marks on supposedly a young team. And did you hear from Aaron Donald yesterday? You didn't hear from him. Akeem Hicks, if he really keeps going, can be as penetrating, can be as good as Darren Donald was. The thing I liked about Donald and Sue were if a running back got by him, they'd turn around and catch him 4 yards down the line. So it was a great defensive battle, and I liked it. How did you feel about it?
Well, I Hart 4803 says it was both, and I agree with him. I think that there was some great defense being played, but I also thought that there was also some really bad decisions made by particularly Sean McVay on the offense, not running the ball mm-hmm. enough. 17 rushes in that
terrible.
Game. You should have run
terrible.
That almost twice as many. Especially with a young quarterback like that, you can help him with running the ball more often, particularly because it looked like there was nothing wrong with Gurley. So that bothered me a little bit. I think this quarterback Jared Goff, I don't think he's very good. Oh my gosh, he had guys wide open that he overthrew, or, you know, threw it late or so forth. And I see people on Twitter saying, "Oh, well, the safety didn't get over there in time, and this guy that no, he should have thrown that ball earlier." So I just think
that's a nonsense.
Yeah, I think the Bears would have represented the NFC much better than what the Rams did. And I agree. You know, hats off to Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, as much as I despise those guys, they deserve every bit of credit that they are getting because they've done something no other team in the NFL has done. This is a pretty remarkable run for them, huh?
Absolutely. And like I said today to a couple of my friends, and I said, you know, you may never see the likes of a Tom Brady again. I mean, to me, this is more impressive than when you're impressing me as much as Jordan did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Brady just played a pedestrian game. But you know what I liked about both teams? There weren't a lot of flags, and there wasn't a lot of turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I thought it was a clean but good defensive game. I know everybody wants 75-74. Let me ask everybody this.
Mm-hmm.
The national championship game was 44-16. Was that really a good football game between Alabama and Clemson?
No.
Everybody wanted to shut it off after the first quarter.
Yeah.
This was a game that because of gambling, you stayed with it from the beginning to the end, and it was close. Even if you didn't have interest in it, and it was boring, you never knew when a big offensive play would break out, and you'd wait to see Tom Brady in the fourth quarter. That Alabama-Clemson game, 44-16, mm-hmm. I shut it off in the second quarter. So high-scoring games, it depends what kind of high-scoring game it is. And you know what? This was old-school football.
It
really was. And the refs got out of the way for the most part, except for that dreadful first call, which was unnecessary roughness. Helmet to helmet.
Jeez.
It's garbage. Let me explain this to everybody. It used to be if it was helmet to helmet if the player launched himself into people.
Right.
If you tackle a guy high now, mm-hmm. and while you're tackling him, your helmet hits his helmet, that's not helmet to helmet. Helmet to helmet was when these guys were launching themselves with their heads into somebody else's helmet. And now they've changed it, so if they even brush helmets, it's a penalty, and it's gotten out of hand. That was a stupid. Did you see that call? I thought that was a horrible call.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Gene Stenatore, the former referee who was employed by CBS to talk about the rules and so forth.
Hold on. Being of Italian heritage. Okay, hold on. You and I have been friends for a while, though. I will not let you get away with Gene Scacciatore, okay? Scacciatore, okay? You got the guy prowling the pubs of London like Jack the Ripper. Gene Scacciatore. Look out for him. But you know what? Aren't those refs company men?
Yes.
I mean, he even went along with, well, they hit the helmet.
Right.
Right.
Right. The guy, you know, he said, you've got to hold the ball for a second and have both feet on the ground to establish possession.
Was he out of his mind? You could have let the guy catch the ball.
Exactly. That doesn't make any sense. When he said that, I was like, what? he's trying to
rape us. It was a good game. I went 1-1. I had the under. I picked 34-14.
Mm-hmm.
I had the right score for the Patriots. I never dreamt. Do you know there's a guy that won $100,000 by putting 250 on the Rams only scoring 3 points?
Oh, really?
$250. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, hit it right on the head.
Oh, man.
Hit it right on the head.
How cool is
How
that?
How about that?
That's...
I think it might have been Shane. I think it might have been McVay's mother. I'm not sure. Sort of like when Ditka allegedly put money on the fridge scoring a touchdown at the Super Bowl, and he did.
That sounds great. Listen, what'd you think about the halftime show, Maroon 5? I kind of attribute the bad ratings, 5% dip in the ratings, because of Maroon 5 and people kind of thinking, it's kind of blah. I'll watch something on Netflix or whatever. What did you think about their halftime?
First of all, I thought Maroon 5 was a Park League basketball team playing out of Kosciuszko. Number one. Number two, did Sinatra ever have to take his shirt off? He'd wait till he got back to the room with Ava Gardner. Okay? How big would Elvis have been if he took his shirt off?
Yeah, really.
I mean, tell me the greats that took their damn shirts off. Did Bob Dylan take his shirt off? No. Hell, James Brown didn't even take his shirt off. Nobody takes their shirt off that's worth a damn, except maybe Axl Rose. But at least he wore suspenders. Adam Levine looks like he doesn't want to, he couldn't decide whether he wants to be an accountant or he wants to lead the Latin Kings. I mean, I don't know. He looks like a gang leader that went good at the singing market. I don't know what to tell you.
That is so true. He's trying to be a bad boy. You know, some of these guys are trying to get the street rep, you know, and so they do all this stuff with their hair.
And then grown women are going, oh, he took his shirt off. Yeah, look, if I want to read a book, I'll read a book. I don't need to read his stomach, you know? What was that on the front of his stomach? His driver's license? It said California? Did you see the guy on Twitter? Did you see the fat guy on Twitter that just wrote Illinois on his belly with a magic marker?
Yes. That is hilarious.
I mean, if you're known more for taking your shirt off than you are about singing, you know?
That is hilarious.
I said, and then I hear Mike Golic Jr. go today, this morning, going, well, he played most of the songs from his first album. I didn't even know the people existed. Now you want me to find out what they sang on their album. Where is Mick Jagger? Mick Jagger. Where is he? He took his shirt off. Get him back out there. All 120 pounds of them.
I thought
he sucked.
I think, you know, if you're going to book an act for the Super Bowl, it should be one of these legendary acts like the Rolling Stones. You know, I don't think that Maroon 5 has earned the rep to be
they
on
haven't
the chart.
Earned it.
I don't think so. But
and those, by the way, those three rappers, what time they got? Really, seriously, those three rappers, you want me to give up my position? Have them sing for about 10 minutes with me in a room with them. I'll tell them anything they need to know. Were they horrible?
Did it bother you that CBS decided to bleep out or the F words or whatever the hell they were saying? My stepdaughter was saying to me, why would they even have them on the Super Bowl halftime show if they're going to bleep out every other word they're singing, which makes total sense, right? Why
and then, of course, when you're in Atlanta, you got to have the traditional gospel singers. We can't do without them. So we had Adam Levine, who was brutal. We had the three rap singers who just took rap back 30 years. They might get sued. And then you got the gospel singers at the end. I mean, I was waiting for Liberace to come in from the ceiling.
Now,
my God.
You did like Gladys Knight doing the national anthem, right?
She should have done the show at halftime.
I hear you. That would have been nice.
Wait a minute. Sing the national anthem, then sing If I Were Your Woman,
mm-hmm.
Rainy Night in Georgia,
oh.
Midnight Train to Georgia,
yes.
Whatever the hell she sang,
yeah.
and you know, sing about four hits.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would have loved it, and everybody knows who the person is.
That's right.
Unbelievable. And then they're saying, well, Maroon 5, JT the Brick, good announcer, good hostess. Maroon 5 was great for their audience. Come on. There's 13 people. Come on. How about BB goes, who are these people? BB's pretty up.
Mm-hmm.
Who are, and then my buddy calls me, goes, are you listening to these guys? They're horrible. I mean, Justin Timberlake even sang and looked bad, sounded bad when he did the Super Bowl. I don't know if these guys got enough cachet, you know, where they can just come out and have a flat show. If Jagger does it, if Diana Ross does it, if The Who does it, you excuse it.
Right.
But if you're an up-and-comer and nobody knows who you are, how up-and-coming are you?
I think it's a really becoming a really tough gig to book for the NFL. I wonder if they might rethink what they're going to do in the future and maybe go with something, you know, like a, you know, panda act or something like that. Something.
I want the lady that's on the unicycle with the bulls that fall in, you know, the lady that at the Bulls games, or the lady that changes into 50 dresses. Just do that. Bring up David Copperfield and make an airplane disappear. Do something. But enough. This would, you know what they look like to me? Honest to God, a garage band. They look like a damn garage band to me.
That is true. Mo Bierman in the chat room writes, Bruno Mars, who did the show, I think, 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh,
I actually thought tremendous. They were good. Yeah. They have that. Bruno Mars has that kind of Vegas, you know, Rat Pack feel to them. Their music, their contemporary music today, has a vibe to it that it really appeals to me because I love that Rat Packy era, and I thought they were great on that Super Bowl show.
Let me tell you, Bruno Mars is a great, great entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have him back. I mean, people don't realize this. That movie, Honeymoon in Vegas, with James Caan and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that movie, have you seen it?
Yes. I don't remember much about it, but I do remember.
All the Elvis impersonators, Bruno Mars is the kid.
Yes.
He's the kid.
That's
the Elvis impersonator.
That's right. Hey, I got to talk to you before we sign off here. The odds for
Elder, you could talk to me all night if you want. I'm not going anywhere. I'm watching, you know, I'm just hanging with you. What do you want to know?
The odds for next year's Super Bowl, the Bears are at 14-1 along with the Los Angeles Chargers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. KC is at 6-1. The Rams, New Orleans, and Patriots are 8-1. And then third is the Chargers, Bears, and Pittsburgh at 14-1. What do you think about those odds? You think it's advisable that I run down to Vegas and put $1,000 on the Bears?
I wouldn't be excited. That would piss me off if I was the Bears. But you know what? They don't have a kicker. They're still young. Was it a flash in the pan year? They got some answers to questions that they got to answer. But, I mean, the same could be said about the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, Jason, I'll tell you straight out. After watching those two yesterday, I know that they had a great regular season.
Mm-hmm.
They had a great regular season. But after watching them yesterday, I'm happy with Nagy and Trubisky. I thought that we played the Rams great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm tired of hearing Bears fans saying we should be in the Super Bowl. We couldn't beat the Eagles, okay? So quit saying we should be in the Super Bowl because we might have lost to New Orleans. Or we might. I want that to stop.
Mm-hmm.
They had a great year. But if we should have scored more than 15 points. Would you agree with me against the Eagles?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I thought the first half that Trubisky played was lackluster,
right.
And that was a big part of the problem. He got
we
it
act
to
like get... we were supposed to, because we missed a field goal, that we were going to run through everybody. Let's not get too cocky.
Right, yeah.
Let's not get too cocky. We lost to the Eagles, who had a down year, a hangover year after the Super Bowl, and we should have beat them. But that doesn't mean we were going to go all the way to the Super Bowl. We just, you know what? Those are hard to get. I just don't know if the Rams are ever going to go back.
Yeah.
I mean, you got question marks on, and people think they're going to go back. Ask Dan Marino. Mm-hmm. He went when he was 23 years old. He never went again.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hart4803 also says that Trey Burton not playing that game against the Eagles was a big part of the reason that the Bears lost. And that
he's
offense.
Another guy that's a mental case. He's another guy. There's nothing wrong with him. What was wrong with him?
Well,
what is with these guys? They're afraid to play football? I mean, my God, the rule, they don't even play as hard as they used to. It's crazy.
It is true.
You have your dominant tight end with the Bears. I can't play because I'm a little worried. And then you got Todd Gurley going, man, this is a lot of people here. Wow. I'm a little tight. What the hell is going on? We got guys going to war. And we got guys afraid to play football? Come on.
Oh, Mike. You
think I ever get a job at the sanitarium?
I think you and Nurse Ratchet, right, from Cuckoo's Nest?
My God. Nurse Ratchet. You know what? I thought she was a little harsh, but I turned into her.
How true is that?
Where's the white outfit? I think I got one in the closet. My God. Jeez.
All right. So, final thing is, should I put some money on the Bears at 14-1, or should I just wait?
Hell yeah. Put some money on the Bears. I love the Bears. Yeah. I like the Bears next year, man. I do too. I'm bullish on the Bears. But you know what? It could turn around. We've seen it. Look, you know, Atlanta was supposed to win a Super Bowl by now. There's a lot of teams that were supposed to. Minnesota was supposed to be better this year.
Yeah.
We could go over. Every year there's 7-8 new teams in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Every year. So hopefully, and you know, Mitch is going to have people coming at him. But I'll tell you what, they seem to have a pretty good gauge. They got some superstar players. I'm not afraid of the Rams. Believe me, we already beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, who's the team standing in our way? I think the Bears, we're going to be the ones. The Bears always stood in their own way. You heard Jimbo Covert. We should have done this. We should have done that. Uh-huh. Our ownership didn't do this. We didn't get a quarterback we should have had. It was the Bears that did it to themselves. They should have won it more than one Super Bowl. They didn't do what, like he said, they didn't do what they had to do to make sure they had backup for an injured quarterback.
Mike, you're so right, and it pains me so much to have to point at management of the Chicago Bears for being the greatest impediment.
Because they're such good people. I'm such a trouble. You know what? Don't mess with us. You know, it's all I'm saying. Leave us alone. We just want to. You see what Jimbo said? He knows.
Yeah,
Jimbo knows.
Jimbo Covert says Bears Barroom is promoting the Chicago Bears. Leave them alone. That's
who would have thunk that? Who would have thunk that? Except people with common sense.
How true.
My God, another banner night, huh? And then we got what's coming up. Ed, we got Bears Hour Live coming up soon.
Bears Hour Live with Draft Dr. Phil in about an hour. Olin Kreutz, another offensive lineman who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He'll be talking to Draft Dr. Phil.
You know what? I'm going to tell Greg. Coach Gabriel's a good guy. I talked to him on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you know Coach Gabriel.
Coach Gabriel
wants Olin Kreutz to get in the Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you why. He was good, but Coach Gabriel coached him. But there's nobody that deserves to get in, even before Olin, than Jimbo Covert,
mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah, very,
that's
very
my
true.
Opinion. Olin's great, but Olin's got a lot of – Olin was as tough and as good a center as they get, and he knows I love him.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll tell you Jimbo Covert should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so it would be great if those two offensive linemen got in on the same class, and then a year or two later we get Peanut Tillman in there. That would be great. Oh, my goodness. Mike, we get back together here Friday at 9 a.m. Central. You got any?
Yeah, we're going to start picking basketball and stuff.
Ooh, I love it. I love it.
Why stop the train?
Yeah, really.
You don't stop the train. This ain't Murder on the Orient Express. This is a streamliner. This is the Bob's at Riverview, baby.
I love it. The Bob's at Riverview.
All right, Aldo.
All right, my friend.
See everybody at Fairfire. Love you.